The U.S. housing crash has already started, and it is getting worse by the week and by the day.
Welcome to Wealthion. I'm Wealthion founder Adam Taggart here. I'm here with housing analyst Nick Jerley. And Nick and I just finished up recording the part one to this conversation, which is airing right now on his YouTube channel. So after you watch this video, if you haven't seen that part one already, I'll tell you how to go watch that. You definitely should. We get into kind of the macro drivers that are impacting the economy and the consumer at large. And we ended on a cliffhanger of, okay, so what's really going on in the housing market? That's the discussion we're going to have right here. Nick, so glad to have you on the channel. By the way, I'll also give a quick little tease. You are going to be one of the featured speakers at the Wealthion conference coming up next month. At the end of this video, I'll tell folks about that too, because I'm super excited to have you there. And everything that you talk about with me right now, you're going to give the real-time update, you know, in a month from now at that conference. So it's going to be very exciting. All right, Nick, well, look, we just went through a whole bunch of macroeconomic data that, being real honest, wasn't super optimistic for the future of the U.S. economy and the U.S. consumer household. One of the really big shoes that has not dropped yet, but looks like it might be starting to, could be a correction in the housing market. So I don't want to put words in your mouth here. If you could just start by giving us at a high level, what is your current assessment of the U.S. housing market right now?
Yeah, well, great to be back here, Adam. And my current assessment is simple. The U.S. housing crash has already started, and it is getting worse by the week and by the day. If you look at certain cities in America right now, whether it be in Austin, Texas, a Phoenix, Arizona, or a Boise, Idaho, inventory on the housing market, the amount of homes for sale has spiked 300 to 400% in just 4 to 5 months. And we were actually already seeing home prices go down month over month in many of these markets. And so this housing crash, don't be fooled kind of by the mainstream narrative that, oh, it's just a softening. No, this is underway and it's going to continue to get worse over the next several months as the recession in America continues and as we have a backlog of foreclosures and as home builders now deliver a record number of homes that are under construction.
All right. Wow. I want to pull at each one of those threads individually, but real quick, why don't we just start with sort of your general assessment of the current valuations in the housing market, right? So our starting point here, if we are entering a correction, how potentially overvalued is the current market, do you think, from what you would consider to be fair value?
That's a great question. And the answer to that question really depends on the city that you live in. I have certain cities that my home price model is projecting a 40% peak to trough home value decline. And some of those locations are already down by close to 10% in just a couple months. So it really depends on the city that you live in. There's certain areas in America where this housing crash is going to be brutal. It's going to be very similar to what occurred from 2007 to 2012. There's going to be other locations that aren't hit as hard, but zooming out more broadly, I think it's realistic to expect that home prices across America go down by 20% on average, but like I said, up to 40% in certain cities and maybe only down by 5% in other cities.
All right. Let me talk about that 20% for a second, because I've heard people say, because nationally, sounds like housing market, you know, a few months back, you know, reports were coming out that the housing market had increased by 20%. Year over year. So, you know, I've seen a lot of people just sort of shrug their shoulders and say, what's a 20% correction? It just brings us back to where we were at the beginning of 2021. It's no big deal. What do you have to say to those people?
Well, those people are wrong. It's a huge deal. The first thing you need to understand is that lots of people bought their homes over the last 2 years. In fact, I think around 15% of current homeowners in America have purchased their home over the last couple of years. So that means a lot of people are now going to be underwater on their mortgage as home prices decline. And that's going to lead to foreclosures. It's going to lead to defaults. It's going to lead to a negative wealth effect across the economy that's going to lower consumer spending more broadly, which is going to make the recession even worse. And that's going to cause home prices to go down by even more. So the broader thing people need to understand is that housing is a massive asset. Its value is $40 trillion. It's even bigger than the stock market. So when housing goes down, that's historically something that propels the overall economy into a nosedive.
Yeah, well, it absolutely does. And I've mentioned this in this program a lot, but you know, financial assets, stocks, et cetera, they are you know, it's something like 90% of all those assets are owned by the top 10% of households. So they're not that well distributed across society. So what happens in the stock market, even though we hear about it in the media a lot, it doesn't really impact the daily experience or behavior of the vast majority of America. But something what, 60%, two-thirds of American households own their homes, are homeowners. And so what happens in the housing market is much more influential in terms of a wealth effect, or in the case of declining home prices, a negative wealth effect than the stock market is. So I'm really glad that you brought that point up, because we really do have to watch the housing market, because what happens there tends to drive certainly consumer purchase behavior much more than what happens in the stock market.
And a great thing to add to that point is just think about Zillow. Like, now a homeowner can go on Zillow and check the value of their home every day and every month. And we've had tens of millions of homeowners in America over the last 2 years going on Zillow and saying, yay, my house was worth $500,000 a year ago. Now it's worth $600,000. Now it's worth $700,000. Oh my God, I have so much equity. Let me just go and spend money or take out more loans. Everything's going to be good. Well, now they're going to go on Zillow and they're going to see, uh-oh, the value of my home is now $600,000. What am I going to do? Well, I need to cut back. So just to your point, Zillow and kind of the fast-paced nature of this housing market is something new that we're experiencing in this housing bubble. So that's going to have an impact on the crash that I don't think many people have considered yet.
That's actually really fascinating. Hey, a question about the Zillow estimates, or the Zestimates, or whatever they call them, right? Which is, I'm assuming those are put together, you know, crunching the years slash decades of housing transaction data that Zillow has, and then trying to come up with its guesstimate of what your house is worth. And I'm curious if those things tend to, put out poor estimates, poor fitting estimates at turning points in the market, because all the data is you know, drawn from the previous trend. And so as the trend is shifting, you know, could the Zestimates people have on Zillow right now be artificially too high given the current change of trajectory in the market, right? Because they don't have enough sales data yet to start adjusting, right? I'm just wondering if people are getting a false sense of security right now from some of these digital home estimates.
Yes, I think that's a great point. So the Zillow estimate is a lagging indicator, and they actually report two different types of home values when you download their data. One is a seasonally adjusted figure, one's an unadjusted figure. And that seasonally adjusted figure is only showing kind of moderate declines in home prices. But when you look at the unadjusted one, which is more real time, we're seeing in certain markets, like in the Bay Area, home prices are already down 10%. In just 2 to 3 months. And so I actually think, you know, there's quite a few people already seeing that lower Zestimate, but your point is correct. There's a lagging indicator, whether you look at, you know, the Zillow home values or the Case-Shiller home values, which are reported about 3 to 4 months backward, we're not going to see probably until the fall, kind of the reality dawn on many people that, oh man, home prices are now down by 5 to 10% already in just a couple months. And that's when, you know, the housing market crash is going to get even crazier, because there's still certain people who aren't really acknowledging what's going on. Like when I look at a market like Phoenix, Arizona, we've seen inventory more than triple in the last 5 months. And now home prices in Phoenix are down by 5%. And now we're seeing a wave of evictions hit the Phoenix rental market, and many investors are now selling out of the market. And so that's a market that's crashing, but many people don't know that Phoenix is crashing or that Boise or Austin's crashing. And that's something that's going to be picked up by the mainstream, I'm predicting, in the next 1 to 2 months, which is going to turn sentiment even more negative on the overall housing market.
All right. So folks, you're hearing it here first. Nick Durley, the housing market is already in a crash. And that's just going to, you know, that'll manifest in the headlines within a month or two. But you're getting the news right now, straight from the horse's mouth. Nick, I'm sure there are some Bay Area and Phoenix viewers who just spewed their coffee across their laptops when you mentioned some of those numbers here. I will say one stat that I just saw recently in the Bay Area, which is where I'm located, is price declines. Listings with price declines have increased 200%. Year over year right now, just a ferociously high percentage. All right. So look, you threw out a number of stats there. If we can you just go through for a moment at the key indicators that you are monitoring to measure the speed and scope of what's going on in housing right now? I'm sure number of active listings is one. There's a bunch of others, but what are the ones that you tend to look at, and what are they telling you right now?
Sure. The best real-time indicator is home sales and mortgage purchase applications, because these show you home buyer demand. And right now, both home sales and mortgage purchase applications have absolutely plummeted by 20% year over year nationally. And there's certain cities that are down 40 to 50% on home sales year over year. So what that's saying is that the home buyer is out of the market. You know, there's certain people who still think there's buyer demand. There is very little to no buyer demand in this housing market when you look at home sale data. And this is something that is now causing inventory and active listings to surge on the market. So as home sales decline and as more buyers drop out of the market, that's going to leave listings on the market longer. It's also going to cause sellers to get a bit more desperate to list their home. And so now we're seeing, as a result of the decline in sales, the inventory is really picking up. Realtor.com, their national data on inventory, has shown 3 months in a row where America has added over 100,000 homes to its inventory stock. Those are record levels in Realtor.com's data set. And it's going to get even worse into the fall, because the thing that is happening right now in the background that not a lot of people are thinking about, that you got to be paying attention to this, because it's not only a decline in buyer demand and an increase in inventory in the short term, it's the fact that home builders right now are going nuts. A record number of homes and apartments are under construction, are under construction, over 1.7 million units actively under construction that were delayed due to the pandemic. Well, now those delays are easing, and these inventory and this home builder inventory is going to be dumped onto the U.S. housing market over the next 6 to 12 months, just as the home buyer demand is plummeting. So that's something that has potential to send this housing crash into overdrive throughout the end of 2022 and into early 2023.
All right. And you know, a common refrain over the past bunch of years, but certainly we've heard a lot this year, is the housing market really can't correct because we have this chronic shortage of inventory. We just have too few homes. Doesn't sound like it from what you're saying there.
It's not true. On a national level, that is not true. It's one of the biggest fallacies and myths about the U.S. housing market. And what you got to think about, again, is more regionally. Like, it might be true that, you know, Los Angeles or New York City has a shortage of homes because there is dense cities that have restrictive zoning laws and it's hard to build. But it is not true at all that Austin, Texas, or Nashville, or Tampa, or many of the pandemic boom towns have a shortage. In fact, in many of these metro areas, home builders are building 30 to 40 year records of homes and apartments. So the notion of a housing shortage from a structural standpoint is not true. If you look at data comparing the relationship of employment to the number of housing units in America over the last 70 years, we're actually close to an all-time low in that metric, meaning that we have way fewer workers for how many housing units we have. Similar situation exists when you compare population to housing units. So the notion that there's a structural shortage is not true at all. It's largely one that's been pushed by housing market bulls who have a vested interest in seeing home prices go up.
All right. So you're saying, you know, there's sort of going to be this insult added to injury in a lot of these markets where, right as prices are softening hard, you're going to see a lot of new inventory come online, which obviously is just going to mean, hey, you know, a lot more houses out here. We got to bring prices down to get folks interested in them, right?
From the home builders.
I have seen a headline, I think just this week, that said that that you're now seeing to see a spike in buyers backing out of deals with home builders.
Oh yeah, for sure. Home builders are in deep trouble right now. And if you look at what the home builders are saying on their earnings calls or in their sentiment surveys, it is really bad. They're having to deal with a record amount of cancellations for the last couple of years. John Burns Real Estate Consulting just reported that the home buyer cancellation rate for builders is now the same as it was in April of 2020, like that first month of the pandemic. Buyers are as scared today to buy as they were back then. Not only that, I mean, home builders are dealing also with a collapse in buyer demand in home sales. Just a report today from the U.S. Census Bureau reported a 30% year-over-year decline in home sales, up to 50% on the West Coast of America. And so look at what these home builders are doing and saying. You know, their sentiment has collapsed. Their reported buyer traffic has collapsed. And now they're very open about saying this. The National Association of Home Builders just said that we're in a housing recession. They're going on record saying that we're in a housing recession. In fact, so is the National Association of Realtors. So these big entities are starting to come around to the idea that the housing market crash has started.
All right. Well, look, so, you know, I think to a certain extent, the general public is scratching their head and saying, wait a minute, you know, why all of a sudden is real estate potentially vulnerable? It seemed like a really safe asset and it was always going up year after year. We just had a great year last year. And, you know, I look at it and I say, mortgage rates just almost, well, they did double. They've come down a little bit since, but they're still like, I don't know, 80, 85% where they were a year ago. It's just math in many cases, right?
Right. I mean, so we had artificially low interest rates and mortgage rates, not just during the pandemic for the last 10 years. And that enticed a lot of people to buy into the housing market because even though the prices were going up, their payments were low. But now that mortgage rates have surged to actually a more historically normal level, that's meant that over the last year, the typical home buyer mortgage payment's gone up by something like 50% year over year, whereas the average wage in America has only gone up by about 5.5%. So you're right. It's simple math. Home buyers can't afford the cost of a house, either on, you know, the down payment in the price or on the ongoing mortgage payment. And some very concerning statistics I'm seeing now suggest that the quality of loans being issued in the housing market over the last couple of years is starting to approach the kind of poor level of quality in 05, 06, 07. When I look at
really?
The metrics, yes. And this is something that is going to be controversial for me to say because the mainstream narrative on this is saying there's only good loans in the US housing market. But when you look at data from Fannie Mae and look at what's called the debt to income ratio, basically measures what's the mortgage payment and how much are the borrower debt service payments as a relationship to income? That debt to income ratio now is as high as it was in 06, 07 at the peak of the last housing bubble, suggesting that borrowers today are just as strapped in their ability or inability to afford the monthly mortgage payments. And so this is something that I think is going to cause foreclosures to surge over the next couple of years, which is going to, of course, make the housing crash even worse.
Wow. Yeah, that is very concerning. And I mean, right now the Fed is still hiking rates, right? It still may hike them substantially from here. Who knows, right? So I got to assume that you must not think, don't let me put words in your mouth, but you must not think that we're out of the woods yet in terms of future mortgage rate hikes. It seems like you can make a pretty decent argument that the cost of a mortgage is going to continue to rise from here for some time.
You know, it's an interesting question. I think you might be right, you know, especially if the inflationary environment persists, the Fed's likely going to continue hiking interest rates. But altogether, I actually don't think it matters that much. I mean, on one hand, yes, you're right. The surge in mortgage rates has priced many borrowers out of the market, but I want to actually spin it a different way. Now that we're entering a declining home price environment, right? Think about a buyer. The FOMO of the last couple of years is now gone because prices are starting to go down. So the buyer can say to themselves, well, I'm going to wait to buy now. Layer on, what if there's a perception that mortgage rates are going to go down into the future? Now, all of a sudden, a borrower or a buyer would say, okay, so now prices are going down and maybe mortgage rates are going to go down into the future. Well, then why would I have any incentive to buy today? Because if I buy right. in a year, I'm going to get a better deal. And so either way, with whatever happens with mortgage rates, say they go up another 50 basis points or say they go down 50 basis points, I actually don't think it's going to impact home buyer demand that much. Meaning that home buyer demand is going to continue to stay near 10-year low levels as long as this housing downturn continues and long as this economic recession continues.
Okay. I want to get to the question of, could there be a Goldilocks moment here at some point? You know, so much of the market is anticipating a Fed pivot to happen, you know, soon. And look, whether it happens soon or later, yes, at some point, the Fed will likely revert back to an easing policy at some point in the future. Could there be a Goldilocks moment lurking out there in the next year or two where home prices have corrected pretty hard and then the Fed brings interest rates down and so mortgage rates come down, but houses haven't quite picked back up yet and you can kind of get the best of both worlds where you get a lower price and a lower mortgage rate?
100%. I mean, that's exactly what happened in the last housing crash. I mean, 2010, 2011, those were some of the best times ever to buy a home in America. And I think we're going to see some similar deals this time around. So, you know, an intelligent home buyer, an intelligent real estate investor who's looking at the data, especially for their city, they're going to be primed to take an opportunity here to get a home on the cheap. And eventually, you're right, at a mortgage rate that's cheaper today, because eventually the Fed will pivot. They always do. The question is, how bad is the economic downturn and the housing downturn going to be when they do pivot?
All right. And look, you know, given the fact that there's a lot of economic storm clouds out there right now, I do get feedback from folks saying, God, Adam, it seems like everybody you bring on your channel is really bearish. And it's not because I seek out bearish people. I just seek out people that are data-driven, and the data is not very good right now. But I really look forward to having you back on this program, Nick, when you see signs at some point in the future that it would be a good buying opportunity for folks so that we can get that word out to folks.
Sure. I'm really excited to do that. You know, my company, ReVenture Consulting, and on my YouTube channel, I have a home price model for every single metro area in America where I have kind of a reservation price where if values go down a certain amount based off the fundamentals in the market, like earnings and rent, it's going to make sense to buy in that market. And I am very excited for the point in time where I can actually make a buy recommendation on different housing markets in America. But the reality is we are not there yet. And we're not even close to there yet because inflation adjusted home prices, even with the decline over the last couple of months, they're still at an all-time high, higher than they were in 07. So I know it's frustrating for a lot of people out there who have been waiting to buy a house or waiting to buy an investment property. But an important thing to understand is that a housing crash historically takes some time to play out, right? It's not so much like a stock market crash that can happen over the course of a year to 18 months. Historically, housing downturns take, on average, 4 to 5 years to go from peak to trough. Now, that doesn't mean you have to wait from peak to trough. You don't have to wait 5 years. A lot of the price declines are going to occur in the first 2 to 3, but it's just important to understand housing from the perspective that it is a slow moving asset on the downside. And that when we enter a housing crash, whether it was 07 to 2012, that took 5 years. Whether it was a local housing crash in LA in the 90s, that took 5 years. And so it's important to have some patience as far as the housing market goes. And those who are patient, they're going to be rewarded with some great buying opportunities into the future.
Great, great. And I'm just curious, if this correction plays out the way you think it will, where do you put the starting of that clock? Was that a January of this year, spring of this year?
Yeah, that clock is typically from the peak price to the bottom price. So I would say that clock started a month or two ago when home prices started to go down in America. So I would expect that over the next several years, home prices are going to continue to go down. And if history repeats itself, we would see a trough and a bottom of the housing market in something like 2026 or 2027.
Okay. So you've answered a bunch of questions that I was going to get to already, which is good. So let me just jump to this one. Which markets do you think are most vulnerable to what's going on right now? And are there any markets that you think are particularly resilient?
Yeah, the markets that are vulnerable are the ones with the most outside capital and most investor and home building capital entering them. So what I want your viewers to think about is the more home building there is in a market, the more vulnerable it is, because that's going to increase supply and inventory. The more investor demand in a market, the more vulnerable it is to a decline in price, because it means that prices were juiced up by external capital. So I would caution everyone right now, be very careful. If you're in a city where there's a lot of home building and a lot of investor demand, where prices have spiked during the pandemic, where people are spinning narratives like, everyone is moving here, prices are going to go down forever. Prices are going to go up forever. Those are exactly the type of cities to avoid right now. They're going to have the biggest decline in values, but there's other cities in America that are kind of the opposite, that are more of the stable, steady eddy cities, often in the Midwest and Northeast. They're a better buy right now. I think values there will correct, but not by nearly as much.
All right. That's a great way to look at it. And that gets to one of the next questions I had for you, which is about sort of institutional and investor ownership of real estate, of housing, housing stock. That's something relatively new that we're seeing in this cycle, as we've seen a lot of institutional money flow into the residential housing market. It used to be sort of mom and pop landlords, and they're still in the mix there, but we've seen a lot of iBuyers, like the Zillows of the world going in and buying a bunch, or we've seen big hedge funds like Blackstone come in and buy really substantial amounts. And I'm curious, what effect do you think that's going to have in this correction? I think you could make an argument on one side that, hey, these are deep pocketed investors, and they're going to be able to, withstand greater price declines than the average, homeowner. But then you also, on the other side, can make the argument that, hey, these are the loosest hands in the inventory, that when people start getting into trouble or big funds start getting into trouble, they're just going to dump inventory because they don't live there. They're not living in the house. They're just looking at the bottom line. And obviously, if they dump inventory, that could accelerate price declines. So what's your take on institutional ownership?
Well, it's a great analysis you just did, Adam. And I've heard people make arguments from both perspectives, but I'm more sympathetic to the latter one, that these institutional investors are going to cause home prices to go down by even more, because we're already seeing this happen. Very important that people understand, we are already seeing investors bail on the housing market. Again, to use an example like Phoenix, Opendoor, the biggest home flipper and iBuyer in America, they are now cutting prices on their homes in Phoenix by up to 10 to 15% from what they bought them for 3 to 4 months ago. So Opendoor is taking, in some cases, a 15% loss on homes.
So they're just trying to stop the leveraging. That's all they have in their mind.
Right. And you read their earnings reports, their CEO is very clear in saying, oh, we're now going to slow our purchases into the future. And then we're going to cut prices on our existing inventory to get it off the books. And that's happening only like 3 months into this downturn. They are already backing off. Their confidence in the housing market and their business plan is already tanking. Now, many of these investors are saying to themselves, oh, this is just a short-term dip. So they're, you know, the way they're spinning it is like, oh, we're going to position ourselves more for the future. 6 to 12 months from now, we're going to buy the dip. We're going to be in a great situation. And then prices are going to keep going up. But there's a big problem in many of these markets. And that's because, especially the corporate landlords who don't just flip homes, but they rent them out. We are, in my opinion, going to see a collapse in the rental market in America over the next 6 to 12 months, which is going to make not only, you know, like our home value is going to go down for these investors, their cash flows are going to start going down because tenants cannot afford the rent in America. And we're already seeing now a huge surge in evictions in certain cities. We're already seeing apartment occupancies decline. And that's the variable that's going to really push, in my opinion, investors to sell and liquidate over the next year, is as this rental market in America declines.
All right. So I'm sure you just piqued the interest of every renter who's watching right now. So help me understand how that plays out. What's going to cause the rents to go down? Is it because prices are going to get low enough that renters can say, okay, I finally can own my own house and screw you, landlord. I'm going to, you know, switch to my place, and landlords just start seeing flight of tenants? Or is there some other dynamic in play?
It's going to be mainly through lease defaults, as well as kind of the expiration of the eviction moratoriums and all the government stimulus into the rental market during the pandemic. They caused rents to go up like way higher than they should have. For instance, in Miami, over the last 2 years, the typical rent's gone up 48%. In 2 years in Miami, absolutely crazy. Meanwhile, the average wage in Miami, according to the BLS, has only gone up, I think it's something like 9%. So rents in Miami have gone up 5 times faster than wages over the last 2 years, which is not a sustainable situation, much like home prices and mortgage payments going up way faster than wages. So the outcome that we are already starting to see in a place like Florida is record levels of evictions now occurring in certain cities across Florida, as well as much of the Sun Belt. And so don't be surprised if this housing crash, there's going to be foreclosures like I talked about before, but this is also going to be an eviction-induced housing crash where we're going to see apartment vacancies skyrocket. And as those apartment vacancies skyrocket, the rents are going to go down and the cash flow collections for these landlords is going to go down as well.
Okay. And sorry, I'm doing this more just for my own curiosity, but if people aren't leaving to buy a home, where are they going? Are they just moving to a lower price, city and renting again there? Are they doubling up with family? You know, those bodies have to go somewhere if they, you know, default on their lease.
Yeah, so we're already starting to see huge household consolidation, which is basically when, you know, like you said, family members or friends move in with each other. We had a huge surge in, you know, people living alone over the last 3 to 4 years as this economic expansion surged and the number of households being formed in America surged. Well, we're already seeing now not just a slowdown in household formation, but I think we're seeing a reduction in the number of households and occupied housing units, which comes, like you said, I'm going to move in with my parents, or I'm going to move in with my friend. And a very interesting metric that we're seeing real time in the apartment market right now is a company called RealPage, who has software for 11 million apartment units in America. They're reporting that the number of people doing apartment tours and applying for leases has plummeted over the last 12 months, which is funny, as you would think, you know, as fewer people are buying homes, you would think more people would apply for apartments and move in, but we're seeing the opposite. So that suggests there's an overall consolidation in the number of households, and essentially Americans are going to be consuming less real estate into the future.
All right, fascinating. So one other related topic. So I've heard that, you know, a dynamic over the past bunch of years, recent years, has been that boomers haven't been selling their homes the way in which a lot of the demographers thought they would, right? You get to an older age, you downsize to a smaller home, you go off to a senior living facility, you sell your home. A lot of boomers have held on to their homes. And the reason why is because they kept appreciating. So they treated it like a stock in their portfolio. Oh man, this home goes up 10%+ every year, right? Maybe a number of them also, you know, they downsized, right? But they held onto the home and maybe they put it on Airbnb and it became, you know, an income generator for them. I assume those homes have got to be some of the first to go as times begin to get tight for people, right? It's not a home these people are living in. They knew they were going to sell it anyways. Maybe the Airbnb rentals are drying up. And also, you know, there's sort of a first mover advantage to all this too, right? The people who sell earliest, they don't hang on and watch the price just continue to go down. So how much of a factor could this be?
Huge. And what you're essentially commenting on there is that a huge share of the U.S. housing stock is owned by people for discretionary purposes, whether it be a vacation home, a second home, an investor home. More and more of the ownership in the housing market is among people who don't actually live in the home, which, like you said, can push home prices up during the bubble. But as home prices go down, it's going to be very easy for a lot of people in the housing market to sell because they don't live there. They don't rely on that house as a place to live. So I think you're spot on as far as that goes. And there's certain markets that are most exposed to this. One is Florida. I mean, I am very bearish on Florida's housing market in the long term because just a huge level of that housing stock is owned by people who don't live there. And if, you know, they lose their job or maybe if their 401k or retirement goes way down, they're going to be looking at that house as the savior for them, selling it so they can raise cash.
All right. The last time you were on, we had an interesting discussion about work from home trends, and we touched upon this super briefly in the video that we just recorded before this one. But you know, work from home, the pandemic really, you know, changed things up in the housing market. First off, you had a bunch of people who could afford to, you know, looking to either move to some place that was a little bit, you know, less dangerous in their minds from a global pandemic. It also sort of opened the minds to people who could afford to it to, oh, I'm going to have a second home out in the country if I live in a metropolitan area or whatnot. And then, of course, you have the people who just said, look, I hate going into an office. Now I can work remotely. I can work from anywhere. I don't have to work in this high-priced, you know, suburbia, sardine can, you know, packed together type community. I can go live in the wilds of Montana and still do my job. How long lasting are these work from home impacts going to be? And I ask this in the context of we're seeing companies now begin to demand that people come back into the office. So do you have any skepticism that work from home might not be the total revolution that people thought it was?
100%. And I think, look, it's a multifaceted discussion. Clearly, some element of work from home is here to stay. Like, we're not going to just all go back to going to the office 5 days a week. But the reality is that work from home peaked in 2020 and 2021. That was the peak of work from home. And incrementally, we're going to see less work from home going forward. So that means that housing markets that relied on a huge pandemic boom and remote workers buying homes, they're going to be the ones that suffer the most going forward. And you're already seeing this kind of play out when you look at what some of these corporate CEOs are saying, the CEO of Peloton, you know, get back into the office. And if you don't come back into the office, that's fine. Go find another job. We're seeing more and more CEOs and corporations become more brazen at that. And so if I'm a housing market, like maybe a Knoxville, Tennessee, or in Asheville, North Carolina, that relied heavily on remote work demand over the last 2 years, I'm a little concerned that those markets are going to see a home buyer demand vacuum. And essentially, there's just going to be a complete lack of buyers compared to what we saw over the last 2 years. And that's going to cause home prices to go way down. And the thing to really think about, though, where the rubber meets the road here is the relationship of home prices and mortgage payments to how much money locals in the economy make. Because right. You know, conceivably, you could be a market that boomed during the pandemic, but like if the wage growth locally kept up with the home prices, you could see a reduction in remote work demand and home buyers coming in, but then the local would still have enough money to support the housing market and buy a home. But the unfortunate thing about today's housing market is in many cities, the locals have just been completely priced out. So now when that marginal remote work buyer or transplant from California or New York doesn't move in anymore because the pandemic is largely over, we're now seeing there's no buyers now to take their place. And that's causing inventory to surge and prices to go down.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. And I live in sort of one of these areas that over the past, 6 years have seen a lot of, people from outside the area or outside the state come move in and pushed out a lot of families that, traditionally lived here, but can't afford to live here anymore. So we might even see this play out in my own neighborhood as things continue from here. All right. Well, look, Nick, I'm going to start to wrap things up, but I do have a key question I'm just about to ask you. Real quick, I just want to remind folks that Nick is going to be one of the featured speakers at Wealthion's fall conference next month on Saturday, September 24th. It's got a phenomenal speaker lineup, but Nick's going to be the housing expert there. He's also going to be available for live Q&A, so you'll be able to have the chance to ask him whatever questions you want to ask him. To learn more about the conference, just go to wealthion.com/conference. And if you're interested, be sure to register soon because the almost 30% early bird discount expires in about a week. So you want to make sure you take advantage of that. All right, Nick. So in beginning to wrap up here, I want to ask you, your parting advice to a couple different constituents. So I'll name them and then we'll just tick them off one at a time. Existing homeowners, aspiring homeowners, renters, and investors. What would sort of be your parting bits of advice to each one of those people? Let's start with current homeowners.
Current homeowners, a good question to ask is, do you like the home you live in and do you want to stay there for a long time? If the answer to both of those questions is yes, and you have the money to afford your mortgage payments, you really don't have too much to worry about because a decline in 20% of your home value, while you may not like that, it's not like you're going to imminently get kicked out of your home if you can afford the payments and you like living there. So you can ride out the storm and wait for values to come back up. So I think an existing homeowner that would be more concerned or should have cause for concern would be someone who bought in a panicked state over the last 2 years and used a high leverage loan. Maybe then have some concern. But more broadly, I think existing homeowners, don't worry too much unless you're highly leveraged. Now, if you're an aspiring homeowner, especially if someone who's been waiting to buy over the last 2 years, I understand your frustration because this housing market has been insane. Home buyer sentiment is at the lowest level of all time. According to Fannie Mae, 78% of homeowners now think it's a bad time to buy a home, but things are getting better, objectively speaking. Inventory is surging. There's a record number of homes and apartments being built in America right now, and home prices are going down in about half of America. And I think very soon we're going to see nationally home prices go down. So things are getting better, but now is not yet the time to buy. We need to let this play out a little bit more so you can get basically find your dream home. You want to find your dream home if you're an aspiring buyer without having to make too many compromises. So you're going to have a better opportunity to do that 3 to 6 months from now than you are today, in my opinion. As far as investors, now, this is a really interesting one. I really think this is market dependent because there are still cities in America that offer investors value. And what I'm talking about value is looking at the cash flow and the rents that you can get in certain markets. If you go to the Midwest, a market like Cleveland or Toledo, Ohio, you can still actually buy an investment property and get an 8 to 8.5% rental yield gross return, which is pretty good. Maybe if you're an investor in these markets and you're itching to buy, you could do that today. Just understand that the value of your assets going to go down incrementally into the future. So just be prepared to withstand that, but your cash flow will be okay. Now, if you're an investor in a market like a Las Vegas or Southern California, where your cash flow and rental yields are like 4%, you should not be buying today because you're basically going to be losing money, especially if you finance that with a mortgage at existing mortgage rates, and you're going to be doing that into a declining housing market. So really look at that cash flow yield. I think higher yield markets are going to perform better over the next 1 to 2 years.
All right. And we'll get to renters in 1 second, but one question that probably applies to both investors and current homeowners is if for some reason you are looking to sell or thinking that you might need to sell in the next year or two, which may still be in the middle of the arriving correction. Is there sort of a first early mover advantage here to consider of if you're like, look, I think I might need to get rid of the house in the next 2 years or so, maybe I'm better off actually accelerating those plans to sell when the market is just starting to soften versus when it's down perhaps double digits, 20, 30?
Yeah, it's a great question. And so, I mean, there's a couple metrics you can look at in your market. One would be the active inventory levels and how much they've increased over the last 4 to 5 months. You can also look at the median sale prices to see if they're going down. I think if you're a seller who's been waiting, you still have some time to sell your house. You're going to sell it for less than you could have maybe 3 or 4 months ago, but you still have some time to sell before things get really bad. But then there's going to be like a tipping point at some point in the next, I think, year, where all of a sudden the housing market heads into complete free fall, probably as these backlogged homes get delivered, probably as the foreclosure backlog unleashes, as the evictions surge, just as a recession is occurring. At some point, there's going to be a point of no return where if you wait until after that point in time, I mean, your house might be on the market for 18 months and you might have to be cut the price like, you know, 5% every three or four months. So you just want to make sure you don't wait too long if you're a seller, especially in certain cities that are dominated by real estate investors. Like if there's a lot of real estate investors buying and selling in your market, I would get out right now because these investors don't care, you know, about destabilizing the market. Opendoor made that very clear in their earnings report. They don't care about making prices in the neighborhood go down by 10 to 15%. So, you know, I would say selling sooner than later is the best option.
Okay, great. All right. And then renters, you already sort of gave a little nod to this. My guess is you would say, you know, just hang in there. It's going to get better. But what else might you say to them?
Yeah, I think renting, it's very important to understand what your goals are, right? If someone is, you know, married with a kid or a kid on the way, like, I totally understand the urge to buy a house because you need the house for the space and the security. And, you know, for those type of people, I would say, look, things are getting better. I understand your frustration, but, you know, just look at the trends going on in the market, look into the future. You're going to have it's going to be a better buying opportunity for you over the next 6 to 12 months. Now there's other renters, you know, who maybe don't need to buy for a life situation or maybe buying for preference or financial reasons. And if you're buying for financial reasons, like, oh, I don't want to waste money on rent, you need to be very careful because buying into today's housing market, getting a mortgage at a high rate at still a near all-time high price, you could be wasting a lot of money by buying today in today's housing market. So you need to understand what kind of renter you are as far as future buying opportunities. And if you're someone who wants to stay renting, like myself, I'm a renter. I have no immediate plans to buy. You know, expect lower rents, or at least, you know, in certain markets, rents are going to stabilize. In other markets, they're going to start going down into the future.
Right. So this may be one of the first bit of good news that a renting household has heard in a long time, you know, with price inflation and everything else and, you know, being priced out of the owning real estate and whatnot. It's sort of like, hey, if you think you're going to continue to be a renter for the next couple of years, you may actually start seeing your rent bill go down, which would be very welcome to a lot of families.
100%.
All right, Nick. Well, look, this has been great. Everybody, please remember, this is a part two to a two-part discussion that Nick and I just recorded together at the same time. Part one is running over at his channel. Make sure you go watch that right after this video ends. We'll put up a link to it right at the end of the video before we sign off here. I'll also put a link to it in the description below so you can go straight there and watch it. If you're here watching this part two because you came over from Nick's channel and you're a first-time Wealthion viewer, welcome. Hope you stick around for the interviews that we do almost every day on this channel. Do me a favor to find out when our next interview is getting released. Just click the subscribe button below as well as that little bell icon right next to it. And for Wealthion viewers, when you go watch part one over on Nick's channel, make sure you subscribe to that there too. And folks, if you enjoyed this collab that Nick and I did and want to see us do more of those, let us know in the comment section below, but importantly also just like this video. Nick, thanks so much, buddy. Really appreciate these talks with you. They're always super fun and insightful. I think folks really got a lot out of this one. We should do this together again soon.
Definitely, Adam. This was a lot of fun. Looking forward to doing it again.
All right, great folks. So we'll put up the link to the part one video on Nick's channel there. Nick, thanks so much again. Everybody else, thanks so much for watching.